The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli, that's Bud Elliott, that's Danny Cannell. I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at youtube.com/cover3 and everywhere you get your podcasts on demand. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe, smash that like, and come and join us in the chat, a.k.a. the Cover 3 tailgate. Oh, boy. I mean, look, we're TV stars now. I don't even know like how. I'm so glad the Cover 3 tailgate came to support. I'm so glad so many of the Cover 3 tailgate tuned in because, yes, the Cover 3 podcast was on CBS Sports Network on Tuesday. Thought it went pretty well. Enjoyed it. Can't wait to do that more and more often. It will happen as we start to get a little bit closer to the college football season. We'll be part of a regular part of that. And if you were not aware, the CBS Sports podcast enterprise, the machine, is going to be more prevalent on CBS Sports Network in the afternoon. So whether it's us, the Eye on College Basketball podcast, Early Edge, Pick Six with the First Pick, be sure to check out Afternoons on CBS Sports Network, where you'll get to see more from the CBS Sports family of podcasts. Lots to get to today, including taking a look at some of the big quarterback battles from across the country. But we begin with a question, a discussion. Danny, I want to hear your side of this first because I'm sure you were in HQ Studios all day yesterday. I'm guessing this was a big part of the conversation as the NFL has approved by a vote of 29-3 a new kickoff rule. And it is a kickoff rule that is significant. They are hoping to increase returns while minimizing risks. So the way as a fan you're going to see this, the teams, instead of flying down the field, for the most part, they're going to be lined up really, really close to each other, and then that's where the collision's going to happen. Do you think that college should, or would you like to see the college game embrace the NFL's new kickoff rules?
Oh, he's got a total Bud move going on right now.
Oh, we got the mute.
Oh, thank goodness we weren't on national TV to make that one. That would have been embarrassing.
This is why Danny had to be in studio for the show yesterday. He needed somebody taking care of the mic for him.
That's right. The advantage that college football has, we get a year to watch it, which is what the NFL, they're going to roll it out and revisit it in a year. So I say, like, let's see how it goes. If it goes as well as special teams coaches think it will go, then it could be one of the more exciting plays and we get actual returns. Because at the NFL level, it's reached a point where it's almost just a meaningless play. I mean, the returns in 2003, it was like 79% of kickoffs were returned. This past year, it was 21%, including in the Super Bowl, there were 13 touchbacks. Not one kickoff was returned. So everyone's just like, boring. All right, let's just not even watch. But I also think this will be one of the most dramatic differences from a viewer perspective that we've seen. From a what the heck are they doing? Like, I, because it's going to look, and if you guys, I'm sure you guys have seen it, but if our listeners have watched in the XFL games from years past, they've experimented within that league and it looks awkward. The kicker's all by himself. There's two rows of guys. One of them's on the line. The other one's kind of in this 5-yard box. And then you've got two returners, but I think it could provide for some excitement. The one thing that I am like, I don't even know what to do with this because it's just, it is what it is. But the lack of onside surprise kicks, and think about the impact onside surprise onside kicks have had in the Super Bowl with Sean Payton, in national championship games with Bama Clemson, in other situations where you've tried to steal a possession coming out at halftime. You won't be able to do that. You can still do onside late in the game. If you're trailing, you have to announce it. You have to say, hey, we're going to do it. So they go in more traditional lineup. But I'm willing to sacrifice that for what potentially could be something exciting.
I can't wait for the first time I'm watching an NFL game this year with like friends or family who don't normally watch the NFL, who are like very casual fans, and they see this kickoff. I just can't wait to see the reactions. Like the people who have no idea this is happening, and the first time they're like, what the hell is that? What's happened? This sport, it's gone soft. They don't even play football anymore. Put flags on them, you know, skirts, blah, blah, blah. That's what I can't wait for. As for the rule, yeah, I'm kind of with you, Danny. I don't know. I didn't watch it in the XFL. I don't really have any opinions on whether this is going to work, whether it's going to be interesting. I'm happy that we're at least letting the NFL run the experiment first before we decide whether or not to bring it to college. I'm also happy that of the teams that helped design the rules, like it's the Bears special teams coach was involved. And that makes me happy because the Bears special teams coach already knows how to exploit the new rules because he helped put them together. So at least the Bears will have a small advantage in it this season.
I like it. I think it makes the game more exciting. Now, at the G5 level, like I feel like we already get a lot of wild kickoff return stuff because they don't have a lot of guys who can consistently kick it in the end zone. And they definitely don't have a lot of guys who have enough speed to really cover well on special teams. At the Power 5 level, I do think it is trending a little bit more to the NFL. Like across the sport last year, we had like 6,600 kickoffs and 3,780 were touchbacks. So like a little more than half. But I think if you look at the upper levels of like, the, you know, like Georgia's got a guy that can put in the end zone like 80% of the time. Like most of these real elite teams have a guy who can either kick it through the end zone or they intentionally kick it really high to try to dare you to return it, and they have their guys down there. I would expect college to follow it, not based on any intel, but based on past behavior, which was just last summer. Like we had Dennis Dodd on. They were using player safety to justify all these different rules to try to limit liability. I mean, again, if you see the NFL doing something, it's like, oh, player safety there. A lot of times college follows that.
So you kick it from the 25. Your teammates are lined up at the 40. Then you've got a 5-yard gap, or is it more than five?
I think it's 5 yards. But I had a diagram up earlier.
Okay.
Or is it a 10-yard gap and they have a 5-yard area to line up in? I think it's a 10-yard gap.
Like between 5 to 10 is the bubble where the if you are on the kickoff return, and that's where I think special teams coaches, to your point, Tom, they're probably going to go nuts with their formations. Mm-hmm. And they're just going to be in the lab scribbling out all these different ways to space out your players and try to create whatever advantage is possible. Do we think that college kickers from the 25 are still booting it out of the end zone?
Not most of them, no.
Just the like very, very tip-top elite ones?
Yeah, I mean, that's the fun thing, or they fun is the wrong word. That's the funny thing about the NFL rule change is that most NFL kickers are still just going to boot the ball through the end zone.
Right. And that's what I think they'll revisit to see if they need to move it back further. Since we're talking about rules, the other thing that concerns me greatly, and thank goodness. Well, first of all, I'm glad we're not doing away with kickoffs because that was a legit option on the table from the NFL. And I know college football has proposed this too, of just doing away with kickoffs altogether. I am very glad that we're not going that direction, or we're at least trying to tweak things to keep this a part of the game. The other thing is the hip drop tackle, which obviously, you know, our listeners, I'm sure, are aware of that the NFL, they're trying to ban that. Every single defensive player, I think except for Kyle Long, who's just saying he's a little quirky. I don't know. He's
an offensive lineman.
Kyle needs to shut up. But yeah, exactly. What's an offensive lineman doing waiting on this one? I think that one is going to be an absolute disaster for the NFL. I don't think it survives long enough to make it to college. If it does, I think it's going to make the NFL even more of an unrecognizable product from what we watched 10 years ago. But I really think it's going to be a disaster. I think they'll call it a lot in the preseason, and then people are going to freak out, and you're going to see some players like running after and letting up and stopping, and it's going to be really awful. And I think they're going to do away with it after a year. But it's something to keep an eye on, because to Bud's point, college football does sort of, you know, look at all the rules we've changed and the 2-minute timeout and, you know, keeping the clock moving. We're morphing into the NFL. That's one that keep an eye on that concerns me for sure.
I'm like going to bet. Fourth and 20, Mahomes scrambles around, throws for 7, into the game. Oh, wait. Like, you don't. We'll have a play that's decided on that. Just like target.
On a hip drop? Yeah. Because I was going to say the reason that scares me about the hip drop is the judgment. And just like
tackle.
Yeah.
I am going to bet so many overs in the first few weeks of the NFL season because you won't be allowed to tackle and there'll be a bunch of 15-yard penalties. And I will say, just in general, like, I get it that you're trying. Like, there were a lot of injuries caused by these kind of tackles last year. Compared to compared to the amount of actual tackles there were of that qualified for the rule, it was a high rate of injury. I get it. You want to limit the injury factor. But at the end of the day, like, if you're just training defenses to tackle in a different way now, the new way they tackle will just lead to new injuries. Like, you can't get injury out of this sport. It is just part, it's inbred in it. It is part of what, you know, it's a collision sport. Two human beings can't run into each other at high speeds and not hurt each other at some point. So it'll be interesting to see what these rule changes lead to as far as what's the next thing we're not going to be allowed to do. And then we got to solve that and we'll create the next thing you're not allowed to do.
I think it's a consequence of taking the head out of tackling, by the way.
Yes. Agreed.
You know, because, like, oh, got to get the head out of tackling. Okay. Oh, let's have targeting. Well, guys adapt to it. Like Tom says,
you cannot make football safe. No, while keeping the sport football, it is inherently dangerous and violent, which is one of the reasons everyone loves watching it.
Yeah.
And they're going further and further away from this. Have you guys seen the 3 points? Like, we've talked so much about targeting and the indicators and all this stuff, and it's hard enough to keep track of that. Are you ready for the 3 things they have to look for? Must see a tackler grab the runner. They must see the tackler swivel himself up in the air, and they must see that swivel lead to the tackler unweighted, the airborne motion speed, before which he then falls on the ball carrier's leg area or below the knee.
Like, is this reviewable?
I don't know. It's going to slow things down so much. I'm telling you, I think it's going to be a disaster. I think they're going to call it in preseason and everybody's going to be like, this is ridiculous. What are we doing? And then they won't change it because I think they're going to revisit this in a year. They'll just tell all the officials, like, all right, this was kind of, this is almost impossible. It has to be blatant. Probably if somebody gets hurt, then they'll call it. if somebody's down.
And what will happen is Will Brinson and his ilk will be on Twitter talking about how terrible the officials in the NFL are, blaming the officials for the impossible rules they've been given to regulate on a weekly basis with every single play. Oh, officiating is horrible. No, the rules are horrible. And you keep adding more horrible rules, putting more pressure on the officials to be absolutely perfect. The officials are fine. It's the rules that suck.
Also, like, how are we designating up in the air? Do you remember when we had the launching component of targets, right? Like, did you have to leave both feet, or as long as you're transferring energy from your heels to your toes in like a jumping style motion, could you launch into somebody but not leave the ground? Like, we had that whole debate. This has got to be reviewable, I would think.
I don't think it is.
Everything's reviewable. Let's just review every single play.
Gene?
Oh my God. Thank God CBS has a good one. All right. Because there's another network out there where the two analysts are just like constantly like, how the hell did we get stuck with this guy? And it's one of the most entertaining parts of that other broadcast. Like, CBS, Gene actually knows what the hell he's talking about like 99% of the time, which is hard to do in real time. The other guy is like literally flipping coins. And then you can tell the analysts like hate that they get stuck with this dude.
Gene was getting cooked this week. Not cooked, not roasted. He was getting worked this weekend. There was one point, you know, like sitting in CBS Sports HQ studios, you've got all the truck feeds, right? And so you're hearing Gene over here. There's a super controversial play, but he's in New York, so we can't bring him in on this other feed because he's already dealing with this one. I mean, he was just jumping from site to site to site to site.
Gene that does hoops for us is the same Gene that does the NFL.
It's Gene Steratore.
Oh, yeah. He was both. Yeah,
he was an NFL like official MVP, and a college basketball
we're
official.
We're getting our money's worth out of him.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
It was funny because we're sitting there watching the games on, I think it was Sunday night, and there was a review, and I'm watching them with Lynn, and she's like, God, he must be exhausted. He's been doing this all weekend. And I just look at her. I says, yeah, I can't imagine sitting around for 4 days watching college basketball nonstop. That must be horrible. Nobody else would ever do that.
No, shout out to Gene Steratore. We are very lucky to have like just an awesome official analyst there for both the NFL and for college basketball. Oh, one last thing on the kickoff rule. So if we get it, we want to get it while Zach Branch is still in college football, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Can we accelerate this? We only got got 2 more years of Zach Branch. So we won't have it this year, but he's got 1 more year of college football. So if we could get the kickoff rule in for more Zach Branch highlights, I think I'd be here for it.
I do think if they implemented this rule in the college game, I think in the NFL, you'll see more returns. I don't think you're going to see a giant influx of touchdowns. But I think if you put this rule in college and you get the games like USC versus San Jose State, you're going to see 2 or 3 kick returns for a touchdown a game.
That'd be awesome. I'll sign up for it. Let's go.
Did you see the stats from Sam Schwartzstein?
What? I need more context.
He's the one who created the rule.
Yeah, he created it originally for XFL or UFL or whatever XFL, it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said 0 injuries suffered in over 400 kickoffs, which is insane, and 93% return rate. So I'm trying to look here to see where they kicked off from. All right, so that's midfield 40.
It's a 25.
But it was a different.
No, Chip, they're kicking this off from
the 30
from something with an actual number on it. So it might have been the the 30.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, the NFL did do the NFL did tweak some of the rules that the XFL were using. I do not know what they were off the top of my head. Again, I haven't really dug too deep into this. I'm just going to wait and see what it looks like.
Yeah, I wonder if you have to move it back a little more, like Chip was saying, because the NFL legs, I'm guessing, are a good bit better than the XFL. But how much better? There's only 30 kickers in there's got to be another 30 dudes in a country who can boot the ball out of the end zone.
Yeah.
Like we see in college.
Well, we're on the subject of the NFL. The Bears were chosen to play in the Hall of Fame game, the first preseason game of the year. Do you think it's crazy how Caleb Williams' first game in the NFL will be in Canton, considering that's where his career is going to end in Canton?
I like it.
Also, I just can't wait till he holds out and he doesn't sign with Chicago because he says, I don't want to play for a trash organization.
Nah, he's already there. Don't worry about it. He's a Bear already.
Don't you think kicker for an XFL or UFL or any of these like non-NFL leagues, that's a great side hustle, man. you get team-sponsored travel. You're not going to get injured. I think it's hard to be a defensive lineman on the side, And still go work at your normal job as an accountant or whatever you do. These guys kind of they try to keep the dream alive. Kicker, that's awesome, man. It's cool. Go get a little leg workout. Go kick some. Back in the office on Monday, you're not hurt.
Man, yeah,
it's a great side hustle in the NFL.
You could co-host a podcast.
Daddy went there.
Yeah, but now they got all these returns. what if you got the oh no, you're the last man out there. Got to go make a play.
Got to see. Needs to hit the weight room.
Yeah. All right. Coming up on the other side, we're starting to get a little bit more clarity about what the future might look like for Oregon State and Washington State, and a very significant injury at a team that is hoping to contend for the college football playoff. We'll get into that. Plus, the quarterback battles to know in spring practice next.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast. And the worst type of headline to talk about in spring practice, in my opinion, are the injuries that significantly change the outlook for a player, significantly change the outlook for a team. And one of the most important players on the Michigan defense, a group that, you know, when we were on CBS Sports Network, when we've been here on the Cover 3 podcast, we've said, okay, we've got a lot of questions about Michigan. We'll talk about quarterback in a little bit. But we said, but we think their defense, with all the pieces back, are going to be really, really good. And they just lost a huge piece as Michigan safety Rod Moore has suffered a torn ACL. I saw this from 24/7 Sports' Matt Zenitz. The report includes the expectation that he could miss some, if not all, of the regular season. I understand modern medicine has, you know, sped up the recovery time for these kinds of injuries, but you suffer this in March at the end of the month. It's going to be really tough to be back for those significant regular season games. Certainly the start of the year where Michigan plays Fresno State and Texas in the non-con, not exactly the soft schedule we saw from the beginning of the year for the Wolverines. Tom, do you believe that Michigan has the depth in the secondary to be able to sustain this injury without having some kind of overall downgrade to their defense?
No, there's a downgrade. Like, it's especially when you look at everything else that they, I mean, on the defensive line, they've got plenty of returning. They've got good players coming back on the defense. It's just Rod Moore was one of those good players. And now you don't have him. And now that does cut into your depth. It's like, yes, that they've recruited, they have backups, they have guys who are supposed to be long-term starters, but ideally you weren't counting on them to be a starter in 2024, and now you are. And if something happens to him during the season, now you're down to your third string. So it's a really big deal, and I think it's going to have an impact on them. I don't think like losing Rod Moore is going to destroy Michigan's season, but we've talked about it. Like the odds of this team performing to the same level it performed last year, we're already extremely low because you've lost your head coach. You've lost a lot of your coaching staff. You've lost what's going to be like a possible top 10 pick at QB. Like, you can't replace all that in one offseason and then just go and be, you know, national champions and go undefeated again. So I think this is a team that we're looking at. It's like, if you're Michigan right now, like 9-3, 8-4 is starting to look a whole hell of a lot more like the most likely outcome to the season. So yeah. And like I said, when we talk about spring practice, the only thing I give a damn about, get through it healthy. And now you're seeing Michigan is not getting through it healthy, and that sucks for the Wolverines.
I think it'd be Quentin Johnson who jumps in there. He's a senior. They also lost Keon Saab to Alabama.
I was going to say, this secondary starting to look a little bit dicey from looking like it could have three all Big Ten players to now, we'll see.
Yeah, like, look, which matters a lot because the new DC is a guy who's known to like to bring the blitz a little bit, and so you do need guys to hold up on the back end. I wonder if maybe they will play a little bit, a little less blitz stuff in Michigan because their front is still nasty. I mean, like that's still almost every team in the country would trade defensive lines, I think, with Michigan. Not all, but most. And you're going to need this defense to be lights out, because you're losing two likely NFL draft picks at receiver, and you're losing, depending on how you stack it, all five offensive linemen, right? Or four mm-hmm. of the five. Mm-hmm. So that's and we're going to talk about this in a minute. Who's your quarterback? Don't know. These things do impact the season. And I'll give you an example. Like last year, you can pull the tape on this. When South Carolina lost their left tackle in the spring game, I was like, they are screwed. Because that's not a position you can go replace in the transfer portal, especially not if you're a team like South Carolina that doesn't have a lot of, you know, clout. And their backups were really young guys. And they're like, they're not going to be ready. And like Chip's North Carolina team, they smoked those dudes off the edge in the opening game. And we called it from April. It's like at some point, you're pulling the trigger and that clip's empty. And Michigan ain't empty. But if you have two or three more of these, which unfortunately to a certain team every year, it does seem to happen, then you're in real trouble. So it's not dooming them now, but it does make them on a bit of thin ice. And I'm curious to see like how the portal goes for Michigan, both in and out in about a month.
Veterans, I think, and like leaders are more important than ever in the transfer portal era. Like when you do have a lot of turnover, I think you need those guys. And this is without knowing the culture of the Michigan locker room. This is just going on age and experience. Losing somebody who's been a multiple-year starter. And it's not only from the standpoint of what you're losing on the field potentially in September. It's what you're going to lose for the remainder of the spring, the offseason, when a lot of times, you know, those voluntary workouts are led by seniors when they're out there kind of getting the guys together. You know, when young guys don't want to go out to practice, the veterans are the ones they look up to and have to get guys going. So from that, like, yes, there's going to be a loss of production, but the emotional kind of intangible loss, I think, is another significant one. Because also I think this isn't like, and this is different, but losing their strength was a big culture builder. Somebody who was that emotional uplift that had them ready to go every day. When the coaches aren't around, these types of losses can start to add up. So I think I'm more with Tom. Like, this is starting to become more concerning and like, what does this mean? And like, I don't think I wasn't going to pick them anyway to repeat again or four-peat as Big Ten champs or potentially repeat as national champs. But I think this is going to make it just, it's probably a rebuild year for Michigan. Not saying they're going anywhere, but it's probably going to be a little bit less than what it's been.
Right. And like, that floor is 8 wins.
Mm-hmm. No, I disagree. This is where I think losing key players in the spring. Now, granted, you do have the spring window, so we'll see what they're able to pick up. Like, if I'm Michigan, I'm going to get somebody who's at least has, you know, has some kind of depth. Actually, like, I'm not going to call out which G5 DB they should go get, because I feel like that's real kind of a dick move to the G5 staff. But like, they played a guy in the non-con last year who's hadn't hit the portal yet, and I think he's really good. If you want to do some digging there, if they don't get like satisfactory replacements, it opens up sort of these like kind of, you know, not highly likely but somewhat possible tail outcomes. Like, they could still win the Big Ten. I mean, if things go bad, they could go 6-6. Like, I don't think they will, but this is kind of how bad things start.
6-6 would be a startling floor. We've seen bigger drop-offs coming off a national championship.
I don't think it's going to happen, obviously.
But yeah, I'm going to say.
Have we seen bigger?
Yeah, Auburn.
God, yeah.
Auburn 2011 is always my watermark for how quickly can you go from the top of the mountain to the very bottom. LSU in 2020. 2020, though, we got to apply the full scope of circumstance there.
Still happened.
Yeah.
Do you really think Orgeron was going to keep that thing rolling? I don't know. But COVID was weird.
But yeah, Gene Chizik went in a national championship in 2010 and fired 2 years later because of how quick the drop off was. That's always what I've got as my, it's, I don't know if we'll be like that. Certainly. Also, before we get into our quarterback battles, a few different headlines, all tied together somewhat. First is Oregon State and Washington State have finalized a settlement over the financial distributions. That'll be a nice little cash windfall for those two schools. We also are starting to get a little bit closer to understanding their picture in the future of the college football playoff, you know, sort of how they will be treated, what their payouts will be looking like. We also have on the Washington State front, athletic director Pat Chun leaving to take the job at Washington, which was vacated by Troy Dannon, who was there for 5 months because he took over for Jen Cohen, who left for USC. Yeah, I can't even keep that administrative carousel alive. But I guess that, you know, Washington State and Oregon State have a home for basketball. They're going to be in the West Coast Conference and, you know, other sports. We don't have a full idea of where Washington State and Oregon State look into the future. I mean, Danny, what do you think that for the Cougars and the Beavers, what's it look like in terms of the way they're going to be able to hang or not hang with some of the former Pac-12 peers that they had.
It's hang on for dear life. I mean, it does. The future does look bleak, understandably. I think it's going to be really hard for them to recruit because of it to a lot of sports. You know, there's going to be recruits that are asking questions. I just think this is one of the programs or two of the programs that the uncertainty hurts the most because they are without a home. You know, and I don't know what the solution is. You talk about one. You do? Give it to me.
Just merge with the Mountain West already. Like, I think there's the only reason you haven't is for whatever reason, and this is an assumption. This isn't me saying what it is, but my assumption is the only reason they haven't is because financially, in the short term, they stand to gain far more by not being in the Mountain West and doing the merge. But just become the Pac West or the Mountain 12, whatever the heck you're going to end up calling yourself. That is the most logical thing for both because the Mountain West could use them and they could use the Mountain West.
Stylistically, not stylistically.
But that kills them from a recruiting. Like then you're admitting.
But they're already dead from that at standpoint. Right. Like who, it's not like you're going to get a bunch of teams to leave the Big 12 and come to the Pac 12 or the SEC or the Big 10. Like you are where you are. You have to make the best of your situation. And right now, the only real life vest out there for you is the Mountain West.
Pullman and Corvallis were much more Logan, Utah than Los Angeles. Just in general. Like they, the universe, which is like there's passion there, right? The university communities, like they really love it. It's hard to get to. It's a, you know, it's not exactly bustling with things outside of the campus community. I don't want to, you know, speak too much out of place on that. Danny, I know you said you've called a game in Corvallis, right?
Yeah, both football and baseball. I called a baseball regional out there. It's extremely hard to get to, but they do have a great fan base. Like I called them a Friday night game. They were playing USC. Like they were redoing the stadium. So you saw some of the improvements they were making. I hate it for both these programs, but you are right. I mean, I would say
that's like Boise State. You know, it's like great, great fan base and culture around that football program. But, you know, you compare them to a Palo Alto, or you compare them to Los Angeles, or even, you know, go to
Boise's a little bit easier to get to. And I think it's a little bit more, it's a bigger city. These are really remote, Corvallis and Pullman. Those are hard and they don't have much, you know, the population is small. Boise's kind of a growing, you know, place, but I know it's not, we're not talking about Boise State, but this is the part that doesn't get talked enough about is the devastation that we've seen to some of these programs. And you wonder who it's going to be the next move. Like if there is a super league that does develop, who is going to be just on the outside like these programs are. And there are going to be some more well-known teams with even better brands. I think they're going to get left out and be left in shock like these fans are.
Yeah, difficult stuff, certainly. And if you're Pat Chun, you're there.
Like, see ya. Yeah. Good luck.
You're the Washington State Athletic Director. You secured the payouts from the college football playoff. You did everything you needed to do. And now I'm going to be a Big Ten athletic director. See ya. It's going to be a far different budget for him to have to manage than he would have had if he was still holding things down at Washington State. But where do you think for Washington State and Oregon State? Recruiting's never been a power for them. Do you think that they'll be able to find the combination of coaching and identity to be able to make some waves nationally, or are they just sort of permanently second-class citizens here?
I mean, they're in a weird sort of like limbo state because they are like way better resourced, I think, than all of the Mountain West schools. But they will suffer some compared to the schools that they formerly recruited against for talent. But I mean, they've always been schools that are more like scouting, find the fit, understand like what flaws in a player we can and cannot accept within our systems when they win. And I mean, like you said, they're really good fan bases. So I think like their fans aren't going away, you know, and they're not teams. We see a lot of this doom and gloom on social media. Neither of those teams ever competed for a national title, right? Like they still have access to the playoff if they win, you know, their league. I don't know. I mean, clearly, like some of this definitely sucks, right? Like, I'm sure they enjoyed playing all their Pac-12 rivals. There's no doubt about it. But they're not going away.
Got it. Coming up on the other
side. I'm sorry. I just want to bring just another question for you guys because we talked about Pat Chun's leaving for Washington.
Yeah.
Washington has now had three athletic directors in how long? Seven months?
7 months. Yeah.
They've recently left the Pac-12 and accepted like a kind of a whatever deal they could get in the Big Ten. What's going on in Washington's athletic department and budget to cause so many athletic directors to take that job and look for ways out really quick? Just something to wonder about.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Okay. Are you going to wind horse me here?
No, I just, no. Yeah, it's... I'm wondering if there are budget problems.
Like,
if there's like a shoe that is about to drop on the Washington athletic department that people are taking that job and saying, all right, I'm going to go to Nebraska. All right, I'm going to go to, you know, it's, yeah.
Don't you think those are, well, I don't know. That's a deep discussion. I don't think they're lateral moves, do you?
If Washington was getting a full share,
yeah.
Like if UW was getting a full share of Big Ten revenue, I would rather have UW. I think Dannon, because he is a Midwest guy, him taking the Nebraska job is somewhat related to the geography. But also, if you looked at his comments yesterday in his press conference, I mean, he kind of echoed what the guy that just went to Texas A&M said.
Oh, no.
Trev Albers said, like, hey, like we need to be prepared for a $20 million football salary budget immediately, right? Now, Dannon did not give a number, but he was like, we need to be maximally competitive in this space, which it's funny how some of these teams and ADs can say this. And everybody's like, yeah, of course, that's coming. When Florida State and Clemson say it, they're you know, whiny babies who
you know, well, they're like, not filing grab. Lawsuits against their league, but
right. Well, yeah, because their leagues have the money to pay for it, whereas yeah. ACC, you know, everybody kind of mooches off Clemson and FSU. But Washington. Like to answer Tom's question that I think he's kind of implying.
Bud wants to spend 90 minutes talking about Big Ten quarterback battles, but he's going to sit out here and start throwing strays.
I was all cool. When
is North Carolina going to stop mooching off of Florida State's success?
If Washington is getting, you know, less than a half share for X number of years, if you're the AD, are you worried like that you don't have the same level of resources to compete immediately? Because that's going to depend on that's going to largely decide if you get fired or keep your job. In the long term, they're totally fine. You as the AD have to think about you.
Just one question for you, bud. Did Florida State agree to the grant of rights before they signed it?
Twice.
That's actually an interesting legal question.
So now we're spinning that we didn't actually agree to it.
Correct.
The questions are, did you sign it?
Put a gun to our head and made us sign it.
It's A, did you sign it? And B, did you cash the checks that you were given?
Why was the ACC network so delayed? Was it
Bobby Bowden woke up with a horse's head in his bed and he realized I better sign that grant of rights?
Okay.
There's skeletons there in that closet. They may not want out.
That's fine. I mean, it's just, you signed a contract and took the money from it. It's just how contracts.
All we're asking is that you donate today for Florida State to help get them out of their abusive situation. Pray for Florida State.
In the arms of an angel. Coming up on the other side, some of the Big Ten, some of the SEC, some of the ACC, some of the Big 12 quarterback battles you need to know. We'll get into that and more next.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast. One of the great things about the Cover 3 podcast here on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast is a chance for us to be able to just sort of spread out, us to be able to really dig into some of the topics that we love. And so, you know, circling back to some of the things that we discussed on CBS Sports Network, but also hitting a lot of the ones that we did not, let's take a look at some of the quarterback battles to know. So, let's begin with the Michigan Wolverines, where, as we've said before, you've got lots of different options, but very little proven, at least in terms of being effective as a passer. So I know that there's a belief that a lot of us share that if you go with Orji, then you are committing to a very much like ground and pound, run-focused type of offense. Do you think, Danny, that that would be a limiting call? Like if Orji is announced as the starting quarterback day after the spring game, do you feel like you know what Michigan's going to look like offensively?
Yes, but I don't think it matters who they announce at quarterback. I think I know what they're going to be offensively. It's going to be what we've seen with Sherrone Moore under Jim Harbaugh. I mean, and there's been I heard on First Take this morning, they were arguing about J.J. McCarthy not throwing the ball against Penn State. Yes, he was hurt, but I mean, it did show you Sherrone Moore's dedication to running the football, maybe even more significant than what Jim Harbaugh had. They've got Donovan Edwards back. They're going to have a good offensive line. Even with the losses, I feel like this is a place where you have to trust the development of the linemen. And even when they had J.J. McCarthy, who is going to probably be a top, I'm not buying in the odds, by the way, I think he's going to be a first-round draft pick. They didn't throw it that much. So I don't think you're going to have whoever's the quarterback exposed that much. You know, 18 to 24 pass attempts a game early while they're kind of figuring it out. I think the more interesting thing is that I don't think they do name a starter after the spring. And they've had the luxury of being able to have quarterback battles play out. They don't have that this year with Texas looming week two. My expectation is that you'll probably see multiple quarterbacks in the first month of the season as this kind of plays itself out.
Yeah, I've talked about this a lot. I do think that they are going to be active in the portal after the spring, unless somebody really has a tremendous spring and really takes the job over. I think that you'd be probably doing yourself a bit of a disservice if you don't at least put some feelers out there, even if you don't ultimately end up bringing somebody in. But I think that, like we talked about at the top of the show, the Rod Moore injury, I think that only further impacts the likelihood that this will be a very much a ground and pound kind of offense, just to keep that defense off the field as much and just kind of do the complimentary football kind of thing. And I've also talked about too, when you watch Michigan tape, going back to what you're saying, Danny, about Sherrone Moore and what they like to do, their run game is far more complex than their passing game. Like, it is clear what they care about when it comes to putting together a playbook and a scheme for an opponent. So, yeah, I think you're ultimately going to lean that. And I think that gives Alex Orji a bit of an edge. It's just Alex Orji is going to have to throw the ball at some point, or else it's going to become really easy to stop your offense. And we have not seen Alex Orji do it. They have called plays where he was supposed to throw it, and then he tucked it and ran because either it wasn't there or he just – a lot of young quarterbacks just make that decision. I'm just going to run the ball and rely on my athleticism. So you need to see him take a step forward if this offense is going to be capable of winning 9-10 games.
I tend to agree with all of that. The only thing I'm curious about is, A, are you going to bring in a new quarterback post-spring? And because that implies like you have a guy who's a pretty clear upgrade over what you have, right? You already have sort of the I've played a million years of college football, somewhat knowable floor in Jack Tuttle. You got Denegal, who's a bit of a wild card. Orji, obviously.
What about the former walk-on? I've been ignoring Davis Warren for all of these like graphics and all of these articles. I mean, is that unfair to Davis Warren?
Feel unfair good to story? Davis Warren? Sure. Unfair to reality? I doubt it.
Okay.
Who is out there to go get? Who is not currently a starter that like who would be like it would be clear that Michigan's a way upgrade for them.
Oh,
a starter?
Like the one that was pretty notable that teams were trying to make a run at was Hennigan at Memphis. Mm-hmm.
But he's Hennigan really would be an upgrade.
Yeah, but he's not really a fit.
I think Hennigan's a clear upgrade over what they have.
Yeah.
Would Devin Brown be?
I was thinking that too a little bit, where you look at the two guys. If you look at Ohio State's QB battle, it's really Will Howard, and then there are the two freshmen in, you know, Sayan and Noland. And Kienholz and Brown are probably not going to win the starting job, and when they don't, they're probably going to hit the portal. And I do think that's somebody that Michigan would be worth kicking the tires on, at least. But again, is Devin Brown really any different than Alex Orji? We don't know.
I don't know what their internal grade was on. I'm trying to think about guys who like were highly regarded recruits coming out and what Michigan might have thought of them. But like we'll get to Iowa State probably tomorrow if we do Big 12 tomorrow. But like JJ Cole, is he going to stick around under Beck? Like Beck was just a freshman last year. Common sense says how long are you going to wait forever on that one? I mean, this is kind of tough, right?
Yeah,
I don't think it's crazy to go get somebody, but if you go get somebody, it better be like a very clear upgrade over what you have in the room and somebody who can pick up your system fast.
Although I will say, just to play devil's advocate, push back a little bit. Last year with Bama, spring game looked awful. What are we going to do? They go out and upgrade after, or thought they upgraded, and you know, paired him with his old offensive coordinator with Tommy Rees. And then all of a sudden, like we see some of that, and then the dust settles and Jalen Milroe ends up being the guy anyway. I do think there is some room for Orji to improve as just the wildcat guy who all of a sudden, given the opportunity, develops, you know, and that you could see him struggle this spring and panic ensues. And then, you know, you get out there and all of a sudden it's full contact and they're going and he's better than a disaster.
That's implied, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's no way that Michigan's going to run him out there if he's not seriously improved as a passer from what he showed last year. I wouldn't think.
Right.
I mean, he didn't show anything last year.
Right.
Right.
They didn't ask him to do anything. So, yeah, I'm absolutely willing to entertain it. How about the Caden Proctor? Is there a quarterback who transferred who would then transfer again? Because you can. Because right now, in 2024 – there could be a quarterback who we looked at and we're like, man, that was such a big get. Dante Moore, you've got your quarterback of the future. What if Dante Moore winds up at Michigan?
I thought you were thinking Cade McNamara.
Oh, no. What about Kyle McCord?
Right? Yeah, that would be hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, there's like I'm just existing in this new world after, you know, the Caden Proctor era is in full effect. We could see somebody transfer in December, go through a spring practice, and then transfer to Michigan, and all of a sudden we're changing our whole tune about the offense.
What would that do to the psyche of Ohio State fans if Kyle McCord transferred to Michigan and then beat Ohio State?
What if you're I'll throw a name out there. I don't want to throw any teams under the bus, but Malik Murphy, like he was somebody who went to Duke because of the education. Like Michigan's a great degree. I mean, I could see him being an upgrade.
Not sure that
right.
Malik Murphy had a really tough
two games.
Like his stock price in,
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. His stock price, if he had not had to start, would have been so much higher than if he hadn't gotten out there and just kind of had a rough couple games when Quinn Ewers was hurt. But could be another one right there, especially when you start to think about the way that Sharon Moore might want to piece together that offense. All right, I don't want to bore us. Like for the Buckeyes, it's Will Howard, right? And if it's not Will Howard, yes. They've got problems.
Yes.
Fair.
Agreed. Yes. I would push back a little bit. Like there is some chance that Brown, just because he hasn't been able to stay healthy, has a level in him that we just haven't been able to see because the sample set is so small. I mean, he got hurt almost immediately in the bowl game. So we really haven't
But seeing availability is a pretty key ability. And Devin Brown has not shown the ability to stay.
He got hurt last spring, and it wasn't that a hand thing too. I mean, it's just it's either bad luck. I hate calling players injury prone. That's like not fair.
No, but I mean, history is what history is. I mean, he's been hurt a lot. It doesn't mean he's soft. It just means he gets hurt.
There just wasn't a great portal quarterback class this year. I mean, like your top guys are dudes who, for the most part, it's like, okay, am I going to go seventh round to the NFL, or am I going to stay one more year and collect, you know, somewhere between 850 and like 1.3, you know, which the choice is fairly obvious here. But it's not like Will Howard's an obvious NFL guy. But I do think maybe we can read in a little bit to Brown being unable to beat out Kyle McCord like that. Because Ohio State clearly didn't think much of McCord, because like the reports are that they were going to like not only not give him a bump in NIL, but give him like a bump down. So that kind of tells you what their opinion of the player was.
Daquan Finn to Ohio State. Let's go. No, I'm just kidding.
Daquan Finn to Michigan.
Daquan Finn to Michigan. Not a bad one either. All right, for Oregon, I mentioned Dante Moore. I've got to think that if you get somebody of Dylan Gabriel's experience and production, you're at least putting him in there. It feels like a perfect stylistic fit when we imagine what Bo Nix did, sort of how he handled his business within the flow of the offense. He's going to be able to get the ball out quickly, deliver it on time, put it in space. You've got Evan Stewart transferring there as well. So that, you know, we just saw like one of the best, you know, receiving rooms that we've had at Oregon in a really long time. So it looks like that could put together. But do you give any chance to Dante Moore to be able to unseat Dylan Gabriel for QB1?
No, I'd be pretty shocked.
Yeah. That would just be like injury or something awful has happened.
Yeah, Dante Moore's not playing unless they're up 30 in the fourth quarter. Dylan Gabriel's hurt.
Bud, what about Washington? I need you to help me because there was a lot of ins and outs here. We had a lot of commits, decommits, jump in. We had multiple quarterbacks who are on Washington's spring roster jump into the portal and then get back. We've got one player who committed to the Huskies initially. Is that Williams or Davis? And then one of them came with Jed Fish from Arizona. And then there's Will Rogers, who, of course, was recruited by Kalen DeBoer, former Mississippi State quarterback. I'm not ready to give Will Rogers the surefire QB1 duties, especially with a new coaching staff in place.
Especially with a new offensive line in place. I mean, Washington is going to lose, what, 3 or 4 draft picks off the offensive line, including a couple guys who are...
And then 2 transfers. It's all 5 starters.
Yeah. So, Will Rogers, from the standpoint of Jed Fish's offense, like Fifita, if you trust PFF's like big-time throw rate, was dead last among qualified quarterbacks last year, depending on how you sort it. But like clearly making big-time throws, and if you've seen Fifita in person, like he's kind of tiny. Like, not a real prerequisite. Like, Will Rogers does not have an elite-level arm. He's kind of a distributor, on-time guy, which Fish has been able to work with before. But how is he avoiding pressure? Because, like, the ball's out pretty quick in that air raid system that Mike Leach, RIP, ran last year for Mississippi State, a lot worse. Damon Williams is a really, really accomplished high school player. I don't know, like, as far as eventual upside if it's crazy good, but he is pretty damn mobile. He has played a lot of high school football, so among like the true freshmen here, I could see him maybe you do use him some, especially because of the likely pressure you're going to face from the pass rush, because that's, man, that offensive line situation is yeesh.
I think it's going to be Will Rogers, simply from the fact that Rogers transferred there. He was in uniform during the title game on the sideline. And then DeBoer leaves. Rogers re-enters the transfer portal, and they talked him into staying. I'm guessing part of those talks to get him to stay were, listen, you're entering the spring as the number one QB. It's your job to lose. So I'm guessing that'll be a situation. I don't know if he's going to be there all season, but I would anticipate that when Washington takes the field for the first time in 2024, Will Rogers is your starting quarterback.
I think anybody that's played as much football as he has, I don't know if the upside is there at all. I think I don't know if it's going to translate at Washington, but I would expect him to win the job because of the security of having an experienced veteran who's been out there.
Yeah, because your offensive line is gone. All your receivers are gone. Your running back is gone. That is going to be a very young, inexperienced group. Having somebody who has played as many snaps as Will Rogers is going to come in very handy for a new coaching staff with a lot of new players.
And just to get this straight on the air, is it DeMarcus or DeMarcus Davis? The tall, lanky quarterback who's from California.
Find out when he's good.
I don't know that I ever actually had to interview him. Like I've seen his huddle, but I don't.
That was the other one in there where I'm just like, okay, sure. I mean, if things don't go well with Rodgers, there's somebody who's, because both he and Williams are 4-star prospects. So they are not, you know, they are blue chip prospects. They have decent scouting reports, both with things like needs to grow into body, you know, which, you know.
Oh, he's definitely skinny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would like to see him be in that college nutrition program for a little bit. All right. What about at Nebraska? Because I mentioned this and I remember it was met with like, oh, they've got an interesting quarterback battle. And you, I think the response was interesting is a one way to look at it. Got you've got Dylan Raiola. You still got Arberg. I mean, Danny, what do you think Matt Rhule's going to end up doing? Is he going to go with the prized recruit and just throw him out there right away, and then you save your run first option as the backup in case it doesn't go well? Or do you go with the high floor off the jump and then wait for the ceiling to be able to get a little more comfortable?
Raiola's not there.
Right now?
Yeah. He didn't go spring?
No, he is.
He is there.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So he's able to get the, because if he wasn't, I'd be like, man, that's going to be a long. I don't know. I have to see how it plays out because I think it all depends on how much he's going to, you know, how fluent is he with the language of the system, how comfortable he is. If there's any doubt, if he looks green, like he's not ready, you go with what you've got. And then you kind of transition and kind of sprinkle him in there. And if the season's coming off the rails, then you throw him to the wolves and say, all right, we're building for the next year.
I have no doubt in my mind how this one is going to play out. I no offense to Heinrich Arberg, but we've seen that. We know what the Nebraska offense was with that. It was a whole lot of turnovers. Like he came in to replace Jeff Sims and was like, you know what? You think Jeff Sims fumbles a lot? Watch this. And he was turning the ball over like crazy. You bring in Dylan Raiola. He is your, you know, the savior of the program. He is the latest Nebraska savior. If he's everything he's supposed to be, you are only going to have him for 3 seasons. If he stays, you know, at Nebraska, doesn't enter the portal. But just saying, he's got 3 years of eligibility before he's going to the NFL. You're not letting him sit on the bench for a year just so you could start him next year. You've got year one out of the way. Nebraska, it's not like they're anticipating winning the Big Ten this year. You're going to throw Raiola out there and you're going to let him learn how to play football. You're going to let him get reps. Maybe you only go 6-6, but that would be huge for Nebraska. That's a step forward. So I look at this as Dylan Raiola is Nebraska's starting quarterback. They may not officially call him that until closer to the season, but he is their starting quarterback.
Their schedule opens up, what, UTEP, host Colorado, Northern Iowa, Illinois, at Purdue, host Rutgers, at Indiana. Like, it does open up pretty damn easily.
Yeah.
They're going to push around a lot more of those teams than they won't.
Yeah, and I wrote this like because I had to do like the Big Ten spring previews with the big questions face. Like Dylan Raiola doesn't need to be great to be a huge upgrade over what Nebraska had at quarterback last year. He just needs to be slightly below average, and that will do wonders for that offense.
What else? Bud, I'll let you get sort of grab bag first. You know, wherever you want to take us in the Big Ten, Minnesota, Maryland.
I'm going to throw a couple out here, and I'm just going to end each sentence with, right? Like,
okay.
Drew Lar is the guy at Penn State, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tyler Van Dyke is the guy at Wisconsin, right?
Yep.
Yes.
McNamara at Iowa. They're saying he should be back to action in June. He's the guy,
He right? freaking better be.
Okay. Because like unless, I have got kid, all eyes on
Pillsbury throw boy back.
I'm eyes on Iowa, yeah. For the spring portal, like I'm Joe eyes on Milton. Iowa. Here's one for you.
How did we not hear Pillsbury Throwboy for the season?
We did. Yeah, it was the Jared Lorenzen comp.
Yeah.
Remember, like poor man's Jared Lorenzen?
Well, yeah, I mean, Fat Joe Milton, poor man's Jared Lorenzen. Yeah. I had forgotten Pillsbury Throwboy.
We need to give Deacon as many like nicknames as that Indiana State kid has. What's Avila?
Yeah. Avila. Kareem
Abdul-Jabbar, Stevie Bird, or Stevie Nerd.
Larry Nerd, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Yeah.
Is MJ Morris like for sure the guy at Maryland, or does Billy Edwards actually have a shot there?
To me, that situation, I feel like if you're MJ Morris, and for those who don't know, like he takes over the starting job at last year at NC State, starts four games, and then says he wants to sit because he wants to reserve the year of eligibility, and then he transfers to Maryland. Is MJ Morris making all those moves if he isn't at least reasonably assured that the starting gig is his?
I'm not sure that I want to imply rationality to decisions people make, but I'm not sure that every move MJ Morris made sense last year. So
I don't disagree.
Maybe he is, but I don't know. All right. Indiana, really a pretty interesting one. So Curtis Rourke pre-injury was like awesome. And I don't think Indiana would have ever had a shot to get a guy like Rourke pre-injury. Post-injury, not as good. Is he like for sure the guy in Indiana, or like does Taven Jackson or Tyler Cherry, like do they actually have a real shot at this? I think this may be more of a competition than folks think.
Yeah, I would say it's probably 70% Rourke. I think Jackson and Cherry have like an uphill battle. I do think that's why they bring Rourke in. I think if you're Kurt Cignetti, you're coming from James Madison, like your quarterback at James Madison was also in the portal, and you went and got Curtis Rourke. So I think that gives you some sort of inkling as to how Cignetti feels about the situation.
I have no idea what to think about Minnesota.
Buddy, don't. It's can I just talk about the Rutgers-Minnesota shuffle?
Please.
Real quick. So Rutgers last year has the kid's name is totally escaping.
Callie McManus. No, Wimsatt.
Yeah, Gavin Wimsatt, who completes 46% of his passes. Rutgers says, man, we need to do better than that. Let's go get Ethan Calliope-Manis, who completed 52% of his passes. It is an ugly situation. So I don't know what Minnesota is going to do. I'm assuming they're going to hand off a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Max Bosmer and Drake Lindsey, those are two names that I have to Google.
The Big Ten QB situation is just wild this year.
It makes me kind of hesitant to speak with great confidence on most of these teams because there's a large distribution of outcomes that could occur on many of these. I will harken back to summer school from last year when Ryan Burns of our Minnesota site on 24/7 Sports was like, hey, they actually do like Calliope-Manis quite a bit for the long term because he does have like a big time arm type stuff. But like this is probably not the year to buy in on Minnesota. So he kind of nailed that. He's like, 24 is a little better than 23 for the Gophers. Now he transferred out. Things went a lot worse than I think they thought it was going to go.
What conference is the most stable quarterback situations? Because obviously we're just going to get to Big Ten and then we're going to get out of here, save the rest for tomorrow. So we've got so many questions in the Big Ten. Where do we not have as many questions?
SEC?
SEC returns...
You've got Beck. You've got Dart.
I would also say the SEC has situations.
Got Milroe.
Yeah, you've got situations like Vandegrift at Kentucky where you do kind of assume that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
You've got at a place like South Carolina, you think that, you know, they're going to go with Sellers or, something along that line. You know, you've got Brady Cook at Missouri.
He's back. Yeah, it's probably SEC's probably.
And at Oklahoma and Tennessee, I think you can read into them not bringing in anybody to compete with the young guys. Like
right, Jackson and Nico.
He signed a five-star freshman in the limited appearances that we saw, and they both looked very good. And
the expectation for Nussmeier.
Yep.
Cannon. I mean, at LSU kept him around when he could probably have started for a lot of teams last year. So that probably tells you something about what they think of him. And they let Howard walk to Ole Miss, the five-star they signed in that class.
Yeah. There's probably some Big 12, a little bit of certainty there. But yeah,
Cam Rising, Noah Fifita, those guys are all back. But there are also
trends. That Jackson Arnold category in terms of not talent necessarily, but certainty. You know, I think he was going to beat out Howard at Kansas State this year.
But you've also got Jalen Daniels. Is he going to be healthy? No big question mark there. Hoover Hoover at TCU just got hurt. He's going to be missing some time. So definitely some injury-related questions on that side as well. So, yeah, maybe the answer is SEC, but Big 12 would like a word as well. You want to do those conferences tomorrow?
Yes.
Yeah, and then mailbag the second half of the show maybe?
Yeah. We'll jump up. We'll go ahead and finish this out at the first half and then hit some mailbag questions. As always on Thursdays, you jump in the Cover 3 tailgate. We will we'll take the best questions there as well. And you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Danny Cannell. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.